Chapter 13. Dead Ship. Long Sleep. The Hidden Fortress. They found their way to the secondary docking ring beneath the lip of the orbital plate without further incident. Under Garrow's unerring direction, the pair evaded fresh waves of the Thalaxi as they poured into the shipyards and slipped the net. Here, stalactite-like towers extended out from the underside of the floating metropolis, with nothing but open air between them and the surface of the throne world far below. Between each tower, there were bays where war-wounded ships lay waiting for new orders. For many of these once proud vessels, grievously mauled in battle against the traitors, the only fate before them was in the maw of a breaker's yard. One such ship was the Akulan, a small, battered corvette that had served with the defense fleets outbound from Proxima Centauri. It lay at anchor nearby, a sad ruin of its former self, making ready to set sail for the last time. In a cramped control compartment inside one of the towers, a lone control servitor worked the dock systems in an endless, monotonous cycle of arrivals and departures. "Ready for decoupling," it muttered, speaking into a Vox pickup. Its dull eyes blinked constantly as it processed complex shipping data. "Stand by." Behind it, a hatch opened out of turn, and two humans entered. Without invitation. Correction, one human, one transhuman. The servitor halted in its work cycle to address them. "This area is restricted." The transhuman, gender, male, classification, space marine, ignored the warning. "Make sure this is the right one," he growled, speaking to the other intruder. The human, gender, female, classification, scribe adepta, nodded and pushed past the servitor, moving to a console where she began to type out a string of commands on a keypad. "Stop," insisted the machine slave. "Identify yourself." The transhuman strode forwards and towered over the dock controller. "Look upon the brand on my armor, servitor," it commanded. "Recognize the authority."
"And if it does not?"
The human female's voice betrayed doubt.
"That didn't work the last time you tried it."
"Then things will not end well for our half-brained friend here." With the oiled clatter of metal on metal, the transhuman recovered a magazine of ammunition from a pouch on his belt and loaded it into a bolt pistol. The weapon was primed and aimed towards the servitor's chest. The slave worker hesitated, registering a faint fear analogue as it realized its continued existence was being threatened. Its ruby-lensed optics clicked as they peered at the sigil of Malkador, visible in the ultraviolet spectrum of its vision blocks. "The mark of the sigilite," it intoned, processing this radical new datum. "Let me make this clear," said the legionary. "Obey me, or I will end your wretched existence." The servitor executed a stiff bow.
"Understood, my lord. How may I assist you?" "It learns quickly," said the female.
The servitor watched her access the Akulan's resources packet and data queues, efficiently retrieving pages of information about the frigate.
"This is the right vessel, Garrow. A dead ship with the same registration I saw in the hidden files. Records indicated is bound for the scrapworks of Jupiter's moons, but there's no terminus point logged."
"Indeed." The transhuman,
nomenclature Garrow,
shot the servitor a look. "Where is this hulk really going?"
"Exact destination unknown."
The machine slave had the same information in his head that the female had before her, and the troubling void in the Akulan's flight plan made it flinch with physical pain.
"Error condition," it amended.
"A different question, then." The bolt pistol's black muzzle dropped away. "Where is Othrys?" The word lit a sudden, hateful fire inside the brain matter of the servitor, and it began to twitch like a victim of palsy.
"Unknown, unknown."
Pain analogues rippled through it, causing countless neural misfires in its cerebral matrix.
"Cannot answer. Data purged."
"Stop," ordered the female, and the command brought a wash of relief through the servitor's hybrid body. It immediately purged the offending word from its short-term recall buffer, afraid to even consider it again.
"It must be a mnemonic block," continued the human. "It doesn't know that word because it can't know it. All references to Othrys have been burned from its mind."
At the sound of the forbidden name repeated, the servitor jerked, running the purge program again and again before the word could take hold in its sluggish thoughts. It became aware of the transhuman studying it coldly. "Even a psycho would be unable to find anything in there," the legionary told the female. "Servitor, how long until this wreck is sent on its way?" It bowed again.
egress will occur in 10 minutes. The transhuman paused, and the servitor knew he was considering the act of termination. It waited powerlessly for the kill shot to come, but it never did. Instead, the legionary nodded to the female, and they left as quickly as they had arrived. After a moment, the dock servitor decided to purge its memory of everything that had happened in the last 5 minutes, just to be certain. What few guards there were, watching the docking bay, had their attention elsewhere, allowing Garrow and Tallery to steal aboard the derelict in short order. The scribe did her best to keep pace with him, but she was flagging. He frowned, holding open the Akulan's wide airlock hatch so that she could enter. "Hurry! The umbilicals are already detaching. The ship will be under power in a few seconds."
"I hope you know what you are doing," she panted,
as all around the craft began to rumble and rattle into life. "You have faith in the Emperor, Tallery. Grant me some fraction of the same. Actions of this kind are not new to me." He let the hatch drop shut and led her down the corridor that ran the length of the corvette's spine. She followed gingerly.
"I have never been to the Jovian Yards." Tallery swallowed a gasp. "In all honesty, I have never left the orbit of Terra in my life."
Garrow glanced over his shoulder at her. "I very much doubt that Jupiter or any of her moons are our final destination. Othrys, wherever it is, could lie anywhere within the range of this ship's engines. A craft of this tonnage is fully capable of making a leap across the immaterium, clear across the segmentum solar at maximum potential." Tallery went pale.
"But if we take to the warp, we could be in transit for days. Months."
He nodded again. "Or more." Garrow had already considered what duration of journey they could be letting themselves in for, and accepted it. "But we are committed to this now." He felt the vessel leave the dock, the iron walls about them creaking and grinding. Garrow went to a grimy portal in the hull and watched the departure, with Tallery silent at his side. Thrusters firing, the dead ship disconnected from Riga and got underway. Within minutes, it had pulled away from the gravity of Terra, rising out of the atmosphere. It came about to put its broken bow towards the stars. The deck beneath their feet trembled as velocity increased, dim lights flickering over their heads as power ebbed away to maintain more vital systems. A heavy chill began to descend. Rimes of frost formed on the metal walls, and their breath blossomed into streamers of white vapor.
"The cold," said the scribe, releasing a cough. "Where is it coming from?"
"I expected this," he told her. "We are aboard a derelict. The Akulan no longer has any human crew to speak of on board, only cogitators and servitors to run it, and they are confined to the command tiers. All the other decks will be empty, so there is no need for life support down here. Oxygen, water, heat, all unnecessary." Tallery's eyes widened.
"And how exactly am I supposed to survive a journey without those things? I have heard that space marines can endure even the vacuum of the deep void, but I am not so gifted."
"Be calm," he admonished. Garrow gestured down the corridor, indicating a compartment off to one side, and beckoned Tallery to follow him. She drew her robes close and shivered, following him across the frost-rimed deck. "I have not brought you this far only to let you suffocate or starve. You are correct that my genetically enhanced physiology allows me to live for extended periods in a state of suspension, for decades, if need be. I have something similar in mind for you."
"What do you mean?"
Garrow tapped a control stud, and another hatch opened, vapor hissing out into the corridor from within. Tallery stepped warily inside, and the scribe balked at the sight of dozens of glassy capsules, each the size of a coffin, wreathed in wisps of sub-zero gases.
"Stasis caskets? You're going to put me into deep sleep?"
"I will stand guard while you slumber," he promised.
"No, I can't."
Raw panic flared in her.
"What if I don't awaken?"
Garrow reached for his helmet, where it lay mag-locked to his thigh plate. "Soon the atmosphere in this part of the ship will thin to the point where you will not be able to breathe. I have seen men lost to that manner of death, and it is not a clean ending. You must survive. I need you, so we can finish what we have started." She seemed to shrink before his eyes.
"This is all too much for me."
He shook his head. "I do not believe that. You are braver than you think. You faced that gunship without fear." Tallery gave a dry, humorless chuckle.
"Oh, there was quite a lot of fear, my lord."
"You will be safe," Garrow insisted. "You have my word as a legionary." Before she could say more, He set to work activating one of the capsules. The operations of such stasis devices were known to Garrow, recalled through old regimens of hypnagogic instruction given to him as a Legion recruit. The data implanted in him a lifetime ago as a Death Guard neophyte now returned, and he set to work bringing the system online. He knew that if he allowed Tallery to dwell upon her plight, the scribe's resolve would soon erode. He had to keep her focused on something else. "I would know how it was you came to see the Emperor's divinity, scribe. Why do you think him to be a god among men?" She looked up at him with hooded eyes.
"I am not alone in such belief. Even if the Lords of Terra do not wish it, even if he himself shies away from our imperial truth, our numbers swell as time passes. Those who share true insight, who embrace the faith, we are many."
"You did not answer my question."
"I read a book,"
Tallery sighed, as if a weight were lifting off her shoulders.
"It was called the Lectitio Divinitatis. A rough thing, printed on real paper, if you can believe that, smuggled to me by a friend now dead and gone. What was written there?"
She paused, then smiled slightly.
"All I can tell you is that it spoke to me, in a way I cannot articulate. But I felt as if I had been blind all my life, and only then learned how to see."
The smile deepened and became rueful.
"It sounds irrational when I say it aloud."
"To some, perhaps," Garrow said earnestly. "Not to me."
"Do the legions worship the Emperor?"
Tallery shivered and hugged herself.
"You are the sons of his sons, the Primarchs, after all."
"We obey him," Garrow allowed, "but it is seen as improper to consider the Emperor as a divine being." She studied him closely.
"You think otherwise?"
He paused in his work. "She is perceptive, this one," he thought. "It is difficult for me to put into words also. I have seen horrors," scribed Tallery. "Worlds burning. Monsters. Brothers turning upon brothers. Death and war. All I rescued from that madness was my unbroken faith."
"In what?"
"In him." Unbidden emotion and reverence thickened his words. "I believe he preserved me for something. He saw me to be of purpose."
"Then I envy you,"
she admitted.
"After what I have been through these past days, my conviction has been severely tested."
Garrow's gaze turned inwards. "You are not alone in that. It is the nature of this conflict." He met her gaze. "I came to Riga because I was looking for answers. I have spoken of that to no other until now."
"You are looking for the Saint Keeler, yes?"
Her answer shocked him with its truthfulness. "You know of her?"
"How could I not?"
Tallery shivered as she went on.
"They say she gives enlightenment with every word she utters. But I have never seen her. There are rumours that the saint moves from station to station, never straying far from Terra. And so you came to Riga in the hope that she would be there."
He looked away. "I was mistaken. Euphrates Keeler once helped me see clearly. I had hoped she might do the same again." What seemed like an eternity ago, Garrow had led a crew of fugitives on a desperate mission to escape Horus's treachery. The woman Keeler had been with them on that fateful journey, and along the way, Garrow learned that she had been changed by the War Master's actions just as he had. Keeler became, for want of a better word, a prophet, and he had become a believer.
"The air is getting thinner."
The woman's words were labored.
"Difficult to breathe now."
Garrow cranked open the lid of the stasis casket and helped her climb stiffly inside. "Here, it will preserve you for the duration of the journey." Cautiously, the woman settled herself into the padded interior.
"I am trusting you with my life once again. In the name of the saint and the emperor."
"Your faith is not misplaced," he promised, and touched a control. The casket began to slide closed.
"Neither is yours,"
she told him, her eyes fluttering closed as the stasis systems began to lull her towards deep sleep.
"Like courage, that comes from within, not from the words of others."
She gave a low chuckle.
"I read that in a book."
The lid thudded shut and cut her off as it locked tight. Garrow watched the stasis casket gather up Tallery's fragile life and hold it in check, the hiss of cryogenic gases and the crackle of ice sounding as she was rendered dormant. Frozen in an instant of time, she would survive for as long as it would take them to reach Othrys, wherever that might be. "Sleep, Catano Tallery," said Garrow softly. "I will keep watch." Terra fell away into the endless blackness, and the derelict ventured on alone. Its drives blazing against the void, the Akulan was only a guttering candle, a tiny shard of corroded steel in the unforgiving night. As Tallery faded into the mindless slumber of stasis, Garrow joined her in his own kind of suspended animation. The legionary allowed himself to drop into a fathomless trance state. The catalepsian node implant deep in his cerebellum let him take rest without the need for true sleep, as humans knew it. As one hemisphere of his brain went dormant, the other maintained a baseline level of alertness, shifting function back and forth so that he would never truly lose himself to unconsciousness. The days stretched and thinned like heated glass, becoming unnumbered, their count forgotten. In the dark and dreamless abyss between worlds, the silence was all-encompassing. Out here, where stars turned upon pillars of gravity and the night went on forever, one might be able to briefly forget that this was a galaxy in flames. But those who looked with sharper eyes, those who could perceive the foulness tainting those distant beacons of light, they saw the threads of corruption reaching from world to world. The suns burning out and the planets becoming ashen, barren, and forgotten. In the silence, the galaxy screamed. Nathaniel Garrow did not hear it. He remained behind the walls of his own mind, in the company of thoughts that moved with a glacial slowness, in the thrall of the half-sleep. For the former Death Guard, there were only the questions that never left him. The doubts and the fears. "Keeler, where are you?" His unquiet spirit pulled at the tethers of his soul, resisting the truths he had set out for himself. If he did have faith, as he had told the scribe, then why was it so hard to accept the way of things? Was there still some part of Garrow that longed to see the rebellion end peacefully? Was there a vain hope that all the terrible acts he had seen committed might somehow be undone? There were too many secrets, too many unknowns. Garrow had come to Riga searching for meaning, driven by his doubts, by the words of Rogel Dorn and Merrick Voyan, and more. And for his folly he had uncovered only more questions, and so a more pressing uncertainty was left at the fore. What is Othrys? The voyage seemed to go on forever, and he dreamed as only a legionary could dream, as the ship fell through space towards the answer. But finally, at journey's end, after time unreckoned by the silent, unmoving warrior and his reluctant companion, the old and wounded corvette allowed itself to be captured by the gravity well of a cloudy umber sphere. Had there been an observer at the portals on the command deck, they would have noted that from a distance the planetoid seemed to be without surface features of any kind. But upon closer approach, it became clear that this world was shrouded in a thick mantle of billowing haze, held aloft by constant, powerful winds. The Akulan shifted course and dropped towards the ocean of shade, maneuvering thrusters jetting out blasts of fire to set it on the correct path. Other craft that had come in from differing points of the etheric compass were following the same mandated route. Some of them were near wrecks like the corvette, others newer vessels fresh from Forge World shipyards all across the Segmentum Solar and beyond. All of them had come here in secret purpose, their crews either lobotomized half-minds or a scant number of souls gifted with a most confidential trust. Reaching the point of atmospheric interface, the craft cut into the dense alien sky, briefly transforming into a lance of thunderous fire before tearing through. The Akulan's last flight was almost over, and rather than be taken by the teeth of mindless breaker rigs hungry for raw material, it would be reborn. The derelict's iron bones and steel skin would be repurposed here instead by other hands, for duties unguessed at by the Imperium at large. Emerging from out of the thick, swirling cloud base, the ship began a wide turn over the coast of a rolling methane sea, tacking into the harsh wind and a driving wall of hydrocarbon rain. It passed through a howling primeval typhoon, crossing sculpted crags of black ice and cryovolcanic ridges, towards a forest of human-made structures jutting into the air. Akulin's engines fired one final time to settle it into the grasp of the towering cranes that would disassemble it. Swallowed by the unknown sky, the dying note of the main drives fell to stillness. Othrys had taken another claim, and the count was far from ended. The cutters set to work before the old corvette had cooled from the heat of re-entry, paring it down as a servant might carve a roasted animal for the pleasure of their master's supper. Garrow shouldered open the hatch and stepped out into the harsh chemical rains, holding Tallery to him as he sprinted across the docking gantry. "Quickly, scribe, we must get clear of the ship." She nodded weakly.
"All right. What is?"
Tallery's hands rose as she became aware of her circumstances.
"What have you put on my face?"
"A breather mask," he explained, letting her step down. "The atmosphere on this planet is nitrogen-rich. My augmented lungs can process it, but you would choke to death."
"Oh, of course."
She found her feet and staggered forwards a few steps.
"I feel weak."
"A side effect of the stasis," Garrow explained. "It will pass." Tallery clung to a support stanchion and peered out into the amber clouds.
"Have we found Othrys?"
Garrow nodded. "We have reached the end of our search."
"Throne, look at this place."
She pointed behind them, to where lines of decommissioning bays stretched away towards a broken ridgeline of dark peaks. They resembled the shipyards of Riga, but here it was clear that the reclaimed vessels were being remade into something quite different. A grand pattern of cannibalization was in progress. Monorails and grav lifts carried repurposed metals towards a vast construction site in the shadow of a great black mountain, a gigantic circular pit that had been laser-cut into the stone-hard ice that lay underfoot. Garrow glimpsed the work of countless construction teams in hazard gear and exoskeletons, some toiling as they laid rock-crete foundations, others assembling vast blocks of marble and granite into walls, battlements, and donjons. Scaffolding that reached from the lowest levels of the pit to beyond the height of the tallest crane swayed gently in the wind, warning lamps blinking through the constant oily drizzle. He saw pieces of a large construction through the framework and, as his head tilted up to take it all in, he had a sudden jolt of insight. Growing from the dead center of the work pit was an artificial pinnacle that rose almost as high as the mountain that overlooked it. Although, like everything else before them, it remained unfinished, the legionary immediately understood that he was looking at a stronghold of some kind. The great citadel was the heart of the edifice, and at its feet the roots have been laid for many more buildings of similar scope and majesty.
"What are they building here?" whispered Tallery. "I have never seen the like before."
"I have," said Garrow, with grim certainty. "On Barbaros, made after the coming of the Emperor. It is an echo of similar constructions on Baal, Macrag, Fenris, and other worlds. This is a battle fortress, a place from which wars will be waged." Tallery shivered as a chill washed through her, and she blinked, wiping rust-red rain from the lenses of her breather mask so that she might see more clearly. The closer she looked, the more it became clear that the fortress was nearing completion. Her gut twisted as she considered what kind of army such a bastion could house. The scribe was no tactician, but she understood numbers and logistics all too well. Even at a conservative estimate, she guessed that the great castle and its dominion would be able to support thousands of soldiers and war engines. Taking cover behind a rocky crag, they surveyed the site in greater detail. Garrow was silent for a long time, but the grim cast of his expression spoke to his mood. "I see no legion sigil, no mark of garrison or company that I recognize anywhere in sight."
"Just like your armor," she glanced at him. "So, Othrys is a secret, hidden base, as we suspected. That makes sense. All the hardware, all the equipment being secretly diverted from Riga. It's been coming here. They're using it to build everything we can see."
"Not just from Riga. I'll warrant that the data you uncovered on the orbital plate was just one stream of supplies." Tallery could see Garrow was deeply troubled by the portent of their discovery. "To keep such a thing secret is no small feat. One would need to draw off just enough not to raise the alarm, and do it 100-fold across the Imperium. In time of conflict, it would be a simple matter to misplace a ship here, a Freight convoy there. He trailed off. Tallery felt sick inside.
This is so much worse than I thought it could be. We have uncovered more than just some corrupt governor lining his pockets. This is a nest of the War Master's collaborators on our side of the battle lines. I can hardly believe it, that such a thing could go unseen.
Garrow's expression showed more a sense of grim resignation than concern. It has happened before, damnable though that truth is. Horus's cohorts built and then stole the warship Furious Abyss. This is an evolution of the same tactic, only played out on an even grander scale. Assemble a secret stronghold deep inside the territory of your enemy. Use it to strike at their vulnerable underbelly. The genius of it is that the traitors have used our own infrastructure to build it. He showed her a brittle smile. I almost admire the arrogance. Garrow raised a gauntleted hand and pointed towards a series of skeletal iron spires on the ridgeline surrounding the colossal construction site. Purple-red energy crackled along their length, dissipating in clouds of sparks at their apex. Those are detector baffles, he explained. There are dozens of them surrounding the whole site, projecting an energy grid that would confuse any scry sensors looking this way. With that, and the cloud cover, a ship passing within scanning range of this world would see nothing amiss here.
But who could orchestrate a scheme of this magnitude?
Tallery felt her indignation rise.
No one could construct a fortress inside Imperial space and avoid detection forever.
He eyed her. They did not avoid it, scribed Tallery. You found them.
Garrow was about to say more, but then he nodded over her shoulder, and she turned to see a cadre of hooded figures. They trudged in lockstep across the rain-slick ground, and each wore robes of muddy crimson lined with a cog-toothed trim. The brass shapes of their bionic limbs caught the weak light as they walked.
"The Mechanicum," she said quietly,
recognizing the familiar cast of the figures.
"It would seem their treachery has grown beyond the insurrection on Mars," said Garrow.
"Come, we cannot tarry here." The diffuse glow of day through the orange sky waned, and night fell across the surface of the planetoid. It brought with it a chill that turned the oily rain into a greasy fall of chemical snow. Garrow knew that remaining out on the perimeter of the construction site would eventually lead to their discovery. Keeping Tallery close to his side, he moved as fast as he dared, down into the work pit. They stole aboard a pressurized monorail wagon and allowed it to take them the rest of the way to the Citadel. Peering through a grate, he saw the skeletons of incomplete battle bunkers passing by, and gun towers armed with repurposed starship lascannon batteries. Nothing was going to waste in the forging of Othrys. It was a design that would rival the siege works of the Imperial Fists when complete. But only if they allowed that to continue. Garrow considered the idea of making a stealthy approach into the heart of the Citadel itself. If it followed the design protocols of a standard Imperial Fortress template, there would be a mighty power reactor on the core levels. He knew how to weaponize such a device, but a catastrophic overload would obliterate everything for 5 kilometers in all directions. The secret of Othrys would be consumed in fire, but it would likely take him and Tallery with it in the blast. Garrow frowned. He had no way of knowing their exact location within the Imperium, and even if he managed to destroy this place, those responsible for creating it would not be brought to account unless word of their deed could be sent back to Terra. There would be nothing to stop them from beginning anew elsewhere. At best, he would only delay their plans. And what if this was only one installation among many? To end this, the full truth behind the scribe's unwitting discovery had to be brought into the light.
"My lord," Tallery called to him from further down the cargo wagon, "come look at these."
"What have you found?"
He approached, finding her standing over a pallet of pressed metal cargo boxes.
"These all bear item codes I recall from Curator Lon's files."
Tallery had prized open the lids of several of the shipping containers. Inside, Garrow recognized myriad offensive munitions and weapons elements. He saw racks of fusing cores for melter bombs and boxes of heavy-gauge bolter ammunition. In another crate, there were complex frames for heavy weapons, directed energy cannons of a kind he had only a passing familiarity with.
"What kind of firearms are those?" asked the scribe.
Garrow hefted one of the guns, turning it in his hands.
"These are conversion beamers. An uncommon firearm, not in wide use across the legions or the auxilia. It is rare to see so many in one place."
Tallery peered into the depths of the container.
There are dozens here. No power cells in any of them, though.
He returned the inert energy weapon to its rack and considered it. Whoever is gathering this army wants it to be very well equipped. A single one of these beamers can obliterate heavy armor with one shot.
In the distance, the monotrain sounded its horn, and its motivators clattered over points in the overhead track.
"We're slowing down," said Tallery.
"The loading bay is up ahead," noted Garrow. "Reseal those cargo containers quickly. Be ready to jump, on my order. We can't be on this train when it reaches the dock."
Tallery quickly closed the crates and pulled her breather mask back into place. He heard her whisper something under her breath, like a litany.
"Ave Imperator."
"Indeed," he offered, and then pulled on the lever that opened the cargo wagon's hatch. The pressure change was instant and painful, but he shrugged it off, staring out at the deck flashing past outside. He decided not to give Tallery the chance to question his choices, and pulled her to him in a protective embrace. She cried out, but it was too late, and they had already leapt into the air.